Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. I'm so excited to announce that on Monday, January 13th, WorkSmart Coaching, which is the adult EF coaching division of Beyond BookSmart, is launching our Motivation and Productivity Program, or as we call it, MAP. If you've been feeling stuck or want to start the new year off right, this program is your game changer. Join me and our other experienced facilitators for morning accountability sessions Monday through Friday, where we will set goals, participate in interactive activities, and start each day with purpose. Plus, you'll have access to personalized office hours and weekly workshops full of strategies to boost your productivity. It's just $60 a month, and if you join in January, you'll get 20% off your first 30 days. So stop procrastinating and start achieving with MAP. Head over to map.worksmartcoaching.com or check the show notes to learn more. Let's do this together. So today I am joined by Tyler Moore, who you might know as Tidy Dad on Instagram. Tyler is a New York City public school teacher, a husband, and a father of three. He creates content based on his own experience with tidying that he hopes will help others find joy and order in what he calls the beautiful mess of life. Tyler came on to Focus Forward to share his new book, Tidy Up Your Life, which was just released this month. The book is a deep dive into the connection between physical and mental clutter and how our ability to organize, prioritize, and adapt can shape the way we live. Tyler didn't write his book from an executive function viewpoint, but it is so clear how these skills play a crucial role in the tidying process. I love how his approach not only relies on executive function skills, but also helps strengthen them as we tidy up both our minds and our homes. Tyler and I explored how embracing uncertainty and the messy middle of change, pivoting when necessary, and experimenting with routines can lead to powerful shifts in both mindset and priorities. Tyler shared a personal story about rearranging, or as he says, imploding, his apartment, a months-long process that gave him an opportunity to do some really deep self-reflection and find a new perspective on aligning his family's decisions with their core values. He also explained the thinking behind his step-by-step approach to maintaining our homes, starting with organizing, followed by tidying, and then cleaning. In his book, he expands his ideas on this by offering cleaning and tidying options that are thoughtful, simple, and accessible for each area of the house. You can find more about Tyler and his new book in the show notes. Tyler was so fun to talk with, and I really hope you enjoy our conversation and learn a lot from the one of us who gets up early every day to have the house to themselves and spends 15 minutes of that time cleaning. I wish I could say that that was me, but it's absolutely not. Maybe someday. But first, let's get on with the show.
That idea of the messy middle, that we're conscious of, like, knowing where we're starting, but where we're headed. But yet, there's that messiness because we don't know how things are actually going to turn out. And it's like when you tangibly know that life in some way is about to change. So I do feel like as we're like, there's so many times in life where we're building towards something. When we're in the messy middle, there's this feeling that we really have to like tidy up all the feelings or like brush them aside. But yet I'm trying to just like lean into
right on
what's happening right now. Because I don't know how things are going to turn out. Like I don't, there's no way to anticipate what's going to happen. Yeah. And so often with anticipation, we can then like, I don't know, you can set yourself up for disappointment or like your expectation. Or, you know, you're not conscious of like surprises coming your way. So I don't know. That's what I'm currently like trying to tidy up is what is this season of like the messy middle and how do I navigate it?
I love it.
We're so often trying to figure out everything right now in the immediate moment. Like we want an answer today and even like decluttering. Like when people are thinking about the messes that they experience in their homes, they want it to just be gone. And like that isn't that isn't sort of a realistic outlook. Like you can't just like messes don't magically appear, the tidiness doesn't magically appear either.
Yeah, I see that a lot. Okay, listeners, what you didn't see was me having a crazy coughing fit. I choked on nothing. Okay. I see that a lot in my coaching clients because a lot of them come in you often like in a moment of desperation and they're just like, I need help right now. I'm miserable. Or that maybe their parents are feeling that way. They're like a crisis situation with their child, or they're really, really worried about their child. And it's so hard to be in both places, like as a person who's supporting that person, but then also the person who's experiencing that. And trusting yourself and trusting that that messy middle is where you're gonna figure it out. And you do have to kind of experience it all to really figure it out. You know, like if you went into someone's house and said, you should do this and you should do that and you should do this without considering what's important to them and what they're capable of right now in this moment, then it's not going to last. It'll look pretty for a day, and then
No,
it won't last.
absolutely. And that's why when we were working on sort of the backbone of the book, it's why the two parts of tidy up your mind and tidy up your space were so important. But that order was very important because you have to confront the mind piece before you can do the space piece. And the first chapter is titled Decluttering 101, which really is making sense of the mess. And it's not just dealing with the mess, it's not managing it, it's not getting rid of the mess. Like the words are very important there because making sense, you have to sort of understand what were the root causes of that mess in the first place, what were triggering some of those like thoughts and feelings that you had. So often when we experience messes, be it the ones that you're talking about with like parenting or our workplaces or our physical space, there are all of these feelings of like embarrassment or regret or these feelings of shame that you really do have to sit with and confront. And oftentimes I found that when it's easier for me to confront those with physical objects because I can say like, okay, I was overspending in that category, or I couldn't find X, Y, or Z, which is why I brought these new items in, or we just need to figure out a better like system for what we're doing. Like stuff to me, well, yes, it's emotional. It feels much lower stakes than something like parenting decisions or what's going on in a relationship or what's happening at work. But yet I've been able to transfer skills from the physical decluttering into other areas of my life that do hold seemingly like greater stakes.
So that's something I really wanted to talk to you about was that idea of like exactly what you just said, kind of translating the idea of your values and your whatever your priorities are to the different areas of your life. And so I was just wondering if you could explain to our listeners how you discovered that we really should be putting priorities and values first before we do that physical work of the tidying and all of that.
Well, how the book opens is it opens with a really big mess, which is basically I inadvertently imploded our apartment because I had this like wonderful idea over breakfast one January morning that we should just switch bedrooms with our girls. We're in a 750 square foot New York City apartment. We had upsized the number of people living in our apartment. So we had two little girls under the age of two and under. And I thought, why don't I give them the larger bedroom? We'll take the smaller bedroom because it's going to make more space. It's going to open up all these possibilities. And so my wife said, you know, I think that that sounds like a great idea, but I don't think you need to do that today. Keyword being, you're 2 days into mental health leave from your job, and I don't think that this type of project is something that you need to take on. Well, she left with the girls and her sister to go out somewhere in our neighborhood, and I thought, this is the perfect opportunity to do it. I'm going to switch all the furniture. She's going to get back. She's going to see how beautiful it is, and it's going to be amazing. And she's going to see that I was right.
Yes, I'll
Well,
tell you, and
but
she'll see you're right.
and then what unfolded was absolute chaos because you can't just switch furniture around. I had like unloaded closets, unloaded furniture because when furniture, I was the only person moving the furniture, so it's
And
easier to
you're in a
move things
railroad-style
in a
apartment, right?
railroad style. Yes. So all of the bedrooms, all the rooms are essentially hallways to one another. They all connect. And so I completely imploded things. And so I inadvertently created this mess that we then sort of had to problem solve and work through. And luckily, my wife, she did forgive me for that implosion. She could see through the mess of like what I was trying to sort of get at.
Beyond the messy middle.
Yes, beyond that messy middle. But it then, we were in that messy middle for, a solid 3 to 4 months as we were really wrestling with, okay, are we going to do this? But the larger question underneath that huge mess was, are we going to make life sustainable in New York City for a growing family? Another question
Yeah.
was, is New York City going to be home? I had to wrestle personally with what were some of the things that had caused that mental health breakdown? I, in addition to, our family was expanded, but expanding, but professionally, I also had expanded. I moved from the classroom into school administration because I thought that that was the path that I should be going on, that that was the marker of success. But it ended up that I had upsized professional responsibilities, professional stress. I was working so many hours in my day because I thought if only I work more, then people are going to see me as better at my job and things are going to get easier. But that then caused this whole spiral of other things as a result. And so, through decluttering and sorting and going through the physical stuff, that then helped me come to that realization about tidying up my work life. And so it's been really interesting to see the connections between that physical clutter, that mental clutter, but actually stopping to ask yourself those deeper questions as you're going throughout the process, because it can be so revealing for just getting at the root of what are those underlying values that you hold to be true. And the second chapter of the book is titled, it's basically coming up with your own personal definition of what is just enough. And I do feel like that has been the huge values question for us, because when we can tangibly answer that question of what is just enough for us and in this season, we can then begin to see all of the other things that are around us and basically orient ourselves towards those things that we do value. Like if we value family time, then how are we making space for that? If we value creativity or inspiration, how do we make space for that? If we value academics and school and learning, how do we make space for that? So for each of us, we have different values that are unique to our own selves and to our own families. But that definition of just enough, I do feel like was really transformational.
I wish you could have been a fly on my wall when I was reading that chapter because I just kept going, yes, exactly. I love how you said, saying no to items in one category can open up space for items in another. And I thought, and those items can be things that you can touch, or they can be people, or they can be, just where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really loved that. something about that chapter and your and what you said about feeling like you what you should do is when you really examine your values and what those true core values are, and then you align your life to them and you live like that, chances are you're going to be doing things a little differently than the people around you, right?
Yeah, and I do feel like that's something that I'm constantly checking myself against, because one of the lines in the book is like that idea of keeping up with the Joneses, but who are the Joneses anyway?
Yeah.
That so often we can look at, well, they have a nicer car than I do. They have a nicer house than I do. They're getting to go on more luxurious vacations than I am. But what I really started to check myself around was values around like time and mental energy and emotional connectedness. And that helped to quiet that desire for more and more and more. Because when people say, we drive a 2000 Chevy Malibu, and people joke all the time, they're like, oh, yeah, that's your car. And I'm like, first of all, We live in New York City, so I have many reasons why this car is a good choice. One, I don't have a car payment. Two, it's a really small, actually, body frame. So we're able to get in and out of really tight spaces. Three, if somebody hits it, I don't really care. Like,
Or
I don't,
steals it.
or steals it. Yes, or steals. Like, it's nearly 25 years old. But more so, it's like what it represents is to my like pocketbook every month, I don't have a car payment, which then opens up all of these other, sort of like possibilities.
Yeah.
And it's not to say like if you love cars, then make space in your life for cars. But if you don't, then just embrace that like 2000 Chevy Malibu and just ride it until it dies, which is like what my sort of hope is.
We only have one car. We have been a one car family for like 13 years. And some people have a really difficult time understanding that. And other people are very curious about it and they want to figure out like, oh, could they do that? And we can do it because we both work from home. And for many years our children did the same activity. So we didn't really ever have to be in two places at once. And we have a big change coming up, and I wanted to ask you how you manage this kind of change. Our daughter just got her driver's permit. And so we're going to have three drivers in the house. And so we're thinking we're going to have to get a second car. And we haven't had a second car in so long. So what happens when something happens in your life that forces you to adjust to some kind of new situation that, and then you still have to figure out how you fit your values in? Like,
I
how do
think
you
that's
manage that?
interesting. And even the question that you just posed, or the statement that you made of we're going to have to get a second car, that is interesting because so often, I even found this in my own life last spring, where so often we think that there are only two paths. And like in the case of you, it's like, is it either we get, we have to get a second car, or we keep only the one car. But it's like, are there also other options where it's like, do you figure out what would it look like to share? What would it look like? There are so many options. Even do we have to get a new car? Do we have to get a used car? What are the different options that are available? Because I think so often we think of things as just like it's one way or it's the other way. But it's like, what are all of these other divergent points? And like for me, last spring, as I was editing the manuscript, I was sort of like editing my life once again, trying to tidy things up because I had, the year that I was writing the book, I had a 4-day teaching schedule. And then I asked for it again for this coming school year, and my school just denied the request. And so they essentially gave me what I thought was two choices. It was either a 100% teaching schedule or a 0% teaching schedule. But then a third path presented itself, which was my youngest daughter, Margaret's 3K teacher said, there are teachers retiring at our school. Have you thought about, just wanted to throw it out there. If you've ever thought about, would you want to come to teach at this school? And that third option presented itself at a time where I was like, oh my gosh, it's either 100% or 0%. And I had, once again, those huge waves of anxiety, was having panic attacks on the way to school every morning, trying to figure out. And I went into that place of like, but don't they see how hard I'm working? Don't they see how valuable I am as an employee? Don't they see that my 80% here is better than 0%? Like, why can't they give me this? I'm deserving of this. And I went into that, like, must be seen as place. But then when I could step back, it really did go back to those values of like, what do I actually value? I value being at the same school as my girls. I value having the same schedule as my girls. I value being able to walk to and from school. I value having space in the afternoons for like time. And it ended up that this new school schedule, because it was transitioning from a charter school to the public schools, my day is about an hour and 20 minutes shorter each day. My commute is 5 minutes each way instead of 30 minutes each way. And so when I started to do the like tidy dad math, I was like, you're telling me that 100% at this new school is basically the equivalent of my 80% schedule at this old school.
That's
The
right.
configuration may look a little bit different. I may not be used to that whole full day off Wednesday, but what if I could use other pockets of time differently? And
That's
so
cool.
going back to your example of the car, I do think that there is the question of, well, do we have to get a second car? But then the deeper questions are around, well, what does it look like if we have two cars? Does my daughter feel like this is now her car? Which
No.
brings up this like entitlement around like who gets to use the car? How nice of a car are we talking about? What is my daughter going to be able to do by having, the second car that could actually help or enhance our family in this particular season of life? What could the possible downsides be? And so I do think that when you're faced with big decisions like that, that is sort of the sitting with the mess. And sometimes the mess is just sort of putting out there, what are all of the possibilities? But like you mentioned, when you can align your decision making back to those core values that you have, that can help to provide a little bit of clarity. And it's recognizing that, like, you and your husband's values may be different from the values of your daughter. And it's like, how do you sort of reconcile that as well?
So we've actually had, luckily, we had all those conversations before we came to the conclusion that we will be buying a second car. And now it's interesting. What you saying all that made me realize, like, oh, we actually still are aligned with our values. We're just not aligned with the value of we only have one car. So I'm realizing that if you take the time to think about it, you can find out you are aligned with your values. It just might look different.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true. And I feel like so often, some of these conversations are hard to sort of get into because you don't know even where to start or what the entry point is. And I just remember, when things feel really messy, and even going back to that school decision of last spring, like it did take a lot of sort of, on my part, like journaling and writing. And I made like, even going back to my notebook, like I have all these like lists. Like this is my notebook that I just keep with me all
Nice,
the time.
nice.
I have all of these sort of like lists and prompts that I use. And like one question that I also always come back to is like, what do I want to be true? And it's like, obviously you can't control everything, but it's like, what do I want to be true in this particular season when you really root? Like, what do you want to be true in those like core values that you have that again are so different to each person? And I think that's what I really hope for Tidy Up Your Life from people is that, the world doesn't need another, you just need to follow all of my 10 steps. Or like, if you do A, B is inherently going to happen. Or read this book and everything is just going to feel so much better. Like, that just isn't reality. But I do hope that it provides even some of what we've just spoken about here, just some approaches or some ways in which you can sort of think about a given situation, how you can try to tidy something up. And even in the second half, there are all of those, like, with tidy up your space, there are like the tips for what to do as you go room by room by room. But I think the overarching philosophy of tidy up your life is how can you truly make space for what matters to you and be fiercely protective of what it is that matters to you.
That message very much came through. And I loved how you talked about rhythm and routine and how that changes over time. So I just loved that whole chapter on that. So I was wondering if you could just share maybe that some ideas about that and how like you start your morning every day, cleaning something or tidying something. And for some people, that sounds like a horrible way to start the day. But the other thing that you said in there is that you need to experiment and you need to try different routines until you find one that works. And that's a lot of what I do working with my executive coaching clients is like, let's try this and see how it goes. So
Yeah.
can you tell me a little bit of how you
Yeah.
got to where you learned that starting your day by cleaning was a good thing to do
Yeah. So
for you?
that chapter, it's like that idea of if you can identify sort of the rhythms of life, you can then begin to think about how routines can help to solve problems or like complement, sort of what's unfolding. And it's the idea of the analogy that I draw is that like life is this symphony and that there are so many different parts to a symphony. Like we're sort of the conductor, but we're also managing all of the different sections and the instruments. And sometimes the symphony feels very, very fast-paced. Other times it can feel incredibly chaotic. It could also feel very like slow and contemplative, which I don't have much of that these days. Or it can feel like somebody has just like dropped the cymbal in the back of the percussion section and
Small
like
guy.
everything is like clanging. And so, when I think about routines, it's like routines, I feel like they're best when they help to solve a problem. And if you can identify what some of those pain points are, you can then to begin to experiment with what might it look like if I did X, Y, or Z. And so like one of our pain points when we were new parents is this idea of like keeping our house clean. And I'm not talking about tidy of like putting things away, but literally like when am I mopping the floors because I have a little baby who's like crawling around and licking the floor. Like those are real sort of things that happen. And so one of the jokes that I wrote in the book was that, if parents can do anything for a sustained period of time, the last thing that they are going to do is clean their house. Like my children are walking tornadoes. Like I cannot complete a marathon cleaning task. So I thought, can I take something that feels really overwhelming and can I just break it up into more manageable parts over the course of the week? And with that routine, it started as an experiment. And I quote Patty Morrissey, who she works for Marie Kondo, the tidying extraordinaire. And she talks about this philosophy of 30-day experiments. The idea is that in order to see if something is going to work or make a lasting change in your life, like you really do need to give it like a 30-day go of things. And the idea I like with experiment is that it takes some of the pressure off of things because when you think about a scientist conducting an experiment, they're stepping into that experiment not knowing what the result is going to be. They can have their hypothesis. And so for me, the hypothesis was, will cleaning one area of the house each weekday make cleaning feel less overwhelming? That was the hypothesis. And so what I had to do was experiment and see, can I break tasks up over the week? Can I complete this for 30 days? Can I begin to like set a timer to see if I can work against or race against the clock? Because that was something that was motivational for me. For others, it may feel very defeating, but I was like, can I realistically do this? And again, we're in a 750 square foot apartment. I had this reader who she lives in this castle in Europe that she loves following me. She loves asking me for tips. But I'm like, if you have a castle in Europe, you're not going to be able to clean one area of the house each weekday for 15 minutes. Like,
That
it's just
section cracked me up.
not.
I was like,
It's because
wait,
she
did
was.
he just say she has a castle?
Yes, because because it was how she keeps losing her glasses. Like she would lose her glasses and she was like, what should I do? And I'm like,
Get a smaller
here's
house.
get a smaller move
Castle?
into just one wing. I don't know. But with experimentation, I feel like there are things that I've tried that I've maintained. There are other things that I have not that I've
The butt crack of
decided,
dawn.
yes, oh my gosh. And for some, it's like getting up at the butt crack of dawn is motivational. And for others, it's not. My wife and I are very different in that respect. But also, vocationally being a teacher, like I know that if I don't have that early morning quiet time, I'm just not ready for my day because, I have my prep schedule, I have my lunch schedule. As a teacher, I can only go to the bathroom at certain times. I like can't just go and get a drink of water or go and talk to that colleague. Like everything is, sort of regimented for me as it should because I'm in a school. But because of that, I've had to experiment with routines in other areas of my life to see if things could complement or solve problems or make things just feel a little bit better.
So I'm assuming that it did make a difference, breaking things down into small steps.
Yeah, and that way it did. And I still now get up and clean. I no longer have to think about that checklist. I sort of go on autopilot, but I feel like I'm able to, do things in sort of a sequential way. But also, I've been able to transfer skills to other things. Like over the summer, an experiment I had was, what would it be like to complete an actual triathlon? I had friends, because we have a place in Pennsylvania. I had lots of friends that I swim with that and run with that they were like, I think that you should just try, like, you're just adding on biking. Like, I
Yeah,
think that
right.
you should just try it. And so I was like, okay, it was a little bit longer than a month, but it was like 6 weeks. And people kept saying to me, like, do you want to win? Like, what if your friends beat you? What if you can't do it? What if, like, you're not fast enough? And I was like, actually, that's not the goal of the experiment. The goal of the experiment really was, can I enjoy the process of training for a triathlon? And that was the, and I did. But it was
That's
cool
great.
to see then, in any, going back to that idea of like rhythms, that like, being able to train for a triathlon, I'm able to do now because my children are 9, 7, and 4. When I had a 2-year-old and a baby, that was not realistic.
Just your daily life was a triathlon.
Yes. And so that's when, like, leaning into the seasons of life, and when people are like, so is this a book that's just for parents of young kids? It's like, no, that regardless of the season of life that we're in, we're all sort of like seeking, ways to simplify, ways to tidy things up. We're curious. We sort of like wonder what could be. And I do feel like that chapter is like an invitation to identify the pain point and begin to think about what realistically might make this feel a little bit better.
There was one part, the chapter six, where the order of things, and it reminded me a little bit of what Kendra Adachi said about. She also talks about like doing things in the right order, which will just make it easier to do things. And it reminded me of an experience that I work with college and adult. Adult clients. And one of my adult clients came onto our session the other day and she said, I did something the other day. I spontaneously wanted to completely clear out, clean, and organize my. She lives in a small apartment, but it's two stories. And so she made a list and she wrote down why she was doing each step and exactly how she was going to do each step. And then she made time estimates and then she actually timed herself for each step. And she was able to get through the whole process in one day. And we were talking about how she was able to do that's a huge undertaking. She did it in one day. It took her about 8 hours. And we were saying the reason why is because she did it in the right order, because she took the time to prioritize. This was a priority for her that day and figure out why she wanted to do it. And then she took the time to plan it out and how she was going to do it. And then she was very disciplined. She made herself stay in each thing. And she has ADHD, so that is challenging to follow that and stay in that. So I was just wondering if you could share a little bit more about that right order and what your right order is and how that can help people maybe approach the idea of cleaning and organizing and tidying. And maybe help them open their mind a little bit more to it.
Yeah, so the order that I talk about is organizing, then tidying, and then cleaning. The idea is that it's difficult to tidy something when it doesn't actually have an organizational home. And then it's also difficult to clean something that isn't tidy. And the example is, it's like if you have mail all over your kitchen counters and you've just had your kid walk up and they've like knocked over a glass of orange juice that then goes all over the place. It's then becomes this like overwhelming mess because you're like sorting through the stuff while you're trying to grab the rag to like wipe the stuff up and then to get it clean again. And so what I found is that like separating those three processes is really important. And what comes before that, obviously, is that idea of decluttering, because the decluttering process of like actually being able to clear and then sort your stuff, before you then assess what you want to keep versus what you want to move out and then make a plan is so important, because so often people jump to the, oh, it's so exciting to go to the container store, or Target has the cutest bins, or I love just going to IKEA because they have all these different things that I can just bring home. But what happens is that people then think, oh, this solution is going to solve this problem or pain point. And then they bring the stuff home, then they clear, then they try to put stuff back in the bins and put it away, and they're left feeling like defeated because the solution that they had concocted in their head doesn't actually turn out to be what the result is. And so we found that like that order is so important. And so going back to like cleaning, you know, I clean an area of the house each weekday, but what I found is that it's helpful to do like a really deep tidy the night before. So that idea is like it's much easier to clean our one small bathroom when the night before on Sunday, we've just made sure that like toiletries are put away, things are back in their drawers, that like the bathtub area is clear, you know, the shelf is clear. It's like everyone's, you know, shampoo is back on the little racks. Like that makes it so much easier because then in the morning, when my 15-minute timer running, like it's really easy to spend several minutes just putting stuff away and not actually getting to the cleaning. And so I do feel like, again, that idea of organizing and tidying and cleaning, this is again something that feels a little bit lower stakes in that, like if we're thinking about the workplace, we don't have a supervisor who's like, you didn't clean that bathtub this week. Like, what happened? Why is all that toothpaste there? But in the workplace, we do have people saying, I need you to be able to prioritize tasks in order of importance. I need you to think about the big rock goals that you have for the end of the week and how you're going to break those up into smaller, more manageable parts. Whatever it may be, the language is, I do feel like the home is like training ground for some of those, what we were talking about, those like executive functioning skills, because we then have to transfer those skills into the workplace or in other situations where it really does matter.
So that, how do you take, do you like, what does your classroom look different now that you've gone through this kind of work for yourself than it did before? But like before you, when you were working on that, like heading towards admin track and are you a different teacher?
I'm a different teacher in that I now see the importance of those boundaries between work life and home life that I remember, especially when I was a new teacher, not really being able to prioritize what needed to be done in the immediacy. And I remember a question that a colleague taught me several years into teaching was, what's actually going to impact things tomorrow? Like, what is the immediacy of what needs to be done so that you're ready for those students when they come in the next day? And so, you know, I work in a special education co-taught classroom. So the majority of my teaching career, I've always had a co-teacher that I'm working with. Like this year, it's interesting because I have a co-teacher and I also have a para that I'm working with. But being brand new to the school, there's so much to navigate. And so the teacher that I'm with this year, she also looped up with her class from last year. So I'm now stepping in to established relationships. I'm stepping into established systems, you know, ways in which things operated. And it's, you know, and it's not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's interesting now. This has been a real test for me of how can I see something that I desperately want to change, but yet not just go in and say, hey, we really need to redo this in X, Y, or Z way. How do you begin to just in incremental sort of steps begin to shift a culture or shift a mindset or recognize ways that the way in which my co-teacher was doing things, it might work better or it may alleviate some stress in some way. But I do feel like, you know, for listeners, it's very easy when authors come on. It's exciting to call myself an author now.
You
You know,
are. Look at
that
you.
like you think that it's just this expert who's trying to tell you to do something, but yet they've lost that sense of like being in the trenches along with everyone else. And it is important for readers to know, listeners to know, and for readers that like I am still very much in the thick of sort of tidying up all of these other things. Being at a brand new workplace after 13 years, stepping into a building on day one and knowing absolutely no one. The first week of school, I kept getting lost in the school and was late to lunch because I couldn't find the bathroom for men. I'm the one male classroom teacher in the entire school. And so the bathroom is in between the third floor and the second floor behind the gym. I'm on the fourth floor. It's like the woman in the castle. That it's like it's in a completely different wing. And I had to figure out, like, how do I realistically even find the bathroom in order to make it back to class on time? Like, those are real things that people deal with. I now have all three girls of my daughters at my same school, and I'm navigating dropping the two off in the morning because they can go into the cafeteria. But my youngest, she has to go up to my classroom with me because pre-K eats breakfast at a different time. So, like, what am I doing with her? How do I manage all of her questions, all of the noise that sort of comes with, a 4-year-old who's very excited about school every single day? Like, I am in the
You
thick
are
of
in
it,
it.
and I've used even some of the principles and philosophies to once again tidy up my own life and aspects. And I'm still am, like trying to make sense of things, if that makes sense.
I mean, I really understand that from a like a coach perspective. Like, people feel like, oh, if I coach them people, then I must really have my stuff figured out, and I must have perfect executive function skills. And in reality, it's really hard for me. Like, many things are really hard for me. Yeah, some stuff is easy, but many things are really hard. And I feel like there's this theme throughout everything that you're saying today of this thinking flexibly, and just and also that metacognitive thinking. Like, really think about, like, what do we need, and how do we work best, and what works best for us, and think being able to think flexibly to come up with enough solutions, and or possible solutions, maybe not even actual solutions, that can make us feel less in the trenches, or like le just feel better about our living situation, our living space, or the choices we've made.
Yeah, and I do feel like, when you're talking about spaces, it's like so many people have asked, they're like, so do you think that everyone should just sell all of their stuff and like move to New York City and live in an apartment and live in like 750 square feet? And I'm like,
Wait,
no,
people have really said that?
yes,
Oh
I
my
don't believe
goodness.
that. I don't believe that. I don't have this like even this like New York City superiority complex of like everybody should just do this. But what I do believe that everyone should do is really do that values work that you've just talked about, like really being clued into what are the things that matter to me, because it helps all of those other things that you just mentioned to fall into place. And it gives you that why behind figuring out X, Y, or Z. And even going back to the school decision, like I wanted time with my kids, I wanted the relational connection with them, I wanted the same schedule as them. So, as hard as it was to leave a place after 13 years, as hard as it was to step in brand new, I mean, I've been a teaching for 17 years, to walk into a new building and try to prove myself, to, assimulate with the culture, to figure out like who makes copies, how do I make a phone call out? And then the teacher was like, I'm going to give you the punch code. But if anyone ever asks you who gave you the punch code, you can't tell them that it's me. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't, there are just so many things that we take for granted. And like, this has been a really humbling sort of like journey because I am tidying things up again. And as hard as things get sometimes, because there have been really hard moments at school this fall. But at the end of the day, I get to walk my three daughters home 5 minutes.
That's awesome.
And that is the value that just makes me say, I think that this was worth it. I think that the struggle or the mess was worth it because at my core, this is something that I value and it's like gonna be okay.
Thank goodness you imploded your house that day. Thank goodness you didn't do Thank goodness you didn't do all that prioritizing before.
I know, because I think of like, what would the alternative have been? And that actually is a question that, because I was in, as readers will learn, I was in therapy for 3 years and had a wonderful therapist to sort of like help me tease things apart. I even have a coach now who I work with. I meet with her every other week because so often what I just need is someone to push me and say, what would the alternative be? And that is what I think about sometimes, that it's like, what if I hadn't taken mental health leave? What if I hadn't made the decision to return to teaching? What if I hadn't last spring said, you know what? I think that it's time to change schools. The 100% or 0% just aren't options that I'm really comfortable with. When you do push yourself to answer that, like, what would have happened question, I do think that that can be very revealing too. So yes, I am glad that I imploded my apartment. It also gave a really great story to open the book with.
Well,
You know, so
yeah. You need a hook. There you go. You didn't have to dig deep for that.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to me. I've been following for you for years, and so it's just like such a delight to be able to talk to you about your
Yeah,
book.
no,
I'm so excited for you.
thanks for having me. Yeah, and I am going to embrace this messy middle. I don't need to know what's going to come of this book, because what I truly hope is just that people see themselves in the experiences that I write about or find small ways to tidy things up. But also, as we were talking today, it's like truly be able to name the values around what matters most and then be fiercely protective of those values in the various decisions that they make.
And to trust yourself that you are, that those values are okay. It's okay to have
Which
strong
can be,
values.
which can be hard, but I have learned. Yeah, I love that idea of trust and that it's okay to set the boundaries, and that if things don't turn out the way that we thought, we're going to be okay. And then we'll
That's
figure
right.
out
That's right.
what to do next.
Yes, I've recovered from my coughing fit. So if I
Right.
can do that, then we can basically do anything.
Yeah, but no, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Will you share with listeners like where they can find you if they don't already know about you?
Yeah, so on Instagram, I'm known as Tidy Dad. I have a website, thetidydad.com, and then of course you can get Tidy Up Your Life wherever books are sold. I also encourage you to check out your local bookstore, request it from the library. Libraries are wonderful, and they will, they'll order books for you, they'll put it on loan, but any of those ways, it just really helps to get the word out about books.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. My biggest takeaway from this conversation is the importance of defining your values and trusting yourself before tackling any kind of change, whether it's in your home or your life. Cognitive flexibility, my favorite executive function skill, is a powerful tool for seeing potentially hidden solutions to life's challenges. With clear values and flexible thinking, we can tackle tidying up our minds and our homes with grace, fun, and a little elbow grease. If you have a chance to read Tyler's book, you will love the second half, which is full of practical advice and ideas that you can adapt to your own life and needs. As always, if you have questions or topic suggestions, you can reach out to me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I would love to connect. It helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple or Spotify, and even better, leave us a written review on Apple so more people can find us. You can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Our producer and editor is Sean Potts, and our content marketer is Justice Abbott. Thanks, Tyler, for joining me for this fun and thoughtful conversation. Thanks for listening.